You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll be talking MLB. Welcome in Matt Modica here in a moment. George and I quizzing Matt on his recent draft. We did beat him up last week. We'll continue to do that throughout the month of March. And we'll talk a little bit about the rules changes coming up. But first, speaking of MLB, the 2017 MLB Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package is out. So get your full season fantasy baseball package for one low price of $29.95. Beginning with our deluxe draft package, it is your full season ticket to championship insights and advice. And it all begins with our comprehensive draft package available now and continuing throughout the regular season, guiding your run to a league title. You get completely sortable player projections and profiles for over 800 players, featuring our award-winning team of SWA honorees and Hall of Famers, plus Fantasy Pros accuracy ranking standouts, an improved cheat sheet tool, and auction value generator, a complete suite of in-depth articles and rankings for all styles of play, including Roto and head-to-head, and exclusive insider reports from around the majors. So go to rotoexperts.com and get your 2017 MLB Exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package now. Matt, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, guys. I am woke. It is cold outside. Yeah. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Yeah, we have had a sea change of temperature here in the last few days in New York, but it's good. You know, it gets the blood flowing early in the morning.
Aren't you the optimist?
Yeah, I'm trying to be. You know, spring is only 17 days away, so I feel pretty good about our chances and not having too much more.
We've had spring, summer, fall, and winter this week.
yeah, just about. So, Matt, we talked. George and I touched on the MLB rule changes earlier in the show. We really just kind of glanced over the four-pitch intentional walk. I'm okay with it because it's just, I think, indicative of one of the rule changes that we're making. Intentional walks are at an all-time low. In a 15-game MLB slate, there'd be roughly 10 intentional walks, not even a minute per. So you're not even shaving really 10 minutes off of an entire 15-game slate of MLB. So I think they are trying to make as many changes as they can to speed the game up. But the reality is, as George said, the real way to speed this up is to keep the batters in the batter's box and eventually get a pitch clock going, correct?
That is correct. They've used the pitch clock at Arizona Fall League that I've been to the last few seasons in November. I'm not so crazy about the pitch clock. I don't want to be speeding up pitchers. There's enough injuries going on today. I don't think that's necessary. I think what baseball really needs to do, I think the automatic four pitch is kind of nonsense to me.
It's a silk hat on a pig situation.
Yeah, I think they got to do more like RBI with like urban development, getting younger kids involved in the game. That's how you're going to grow the game. If the kids play it, the kids like it, they're going to watch it.
I don't know about that. You got the same problem. The game's too long. They lose their kids nowadays. They lose interest. I know my kids. They can't watch anything for more than 15 minutes, so they want to do the next thing. I don't think baseball's ever going to get that back as far as the demographic they want. I think once you get to a certain age, that changes a little bit. But as far as the 18 to 34 demographic, which is really what they're after, that's going to be tough. They do need urban development. I think it's absolutely true, and it's very difficult because listen, we all grew up. What's the hardest thing about playing baseball? You need, even if you played half field, you need eight guys. Basketball, you need two.
Mm-hmm. You know, plus equipment.
Bat, ball, gloves, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, that's always.
And a big field.
Basketball is a much easier game to just, you know, go around and play pickup.
But certainly. Wouldn't you say with, like, the NFL and all the head injuries and everything that's getting pronounced now and it's all coming out, that if you have a kid who's, you know, young teenager or just before that, you want to put him in Little League, Babe Ruth. I mean, personally, I loved playing football. I loved baseball. I loved hockey. Hockey was my favorite, actually, to play.
Me too.
But
still is.
I mean, if I have a child, I'm going to gear him more towards baseball or, like, even hockey. Or, I mean, basketball, too. But, I mean, football, it's a great game. I mean, I love watching college football. Going to a college football game is out of sight. It's such an awesome time. But you have to think about your kids'
health.
I think your point about urban development is fair. I think it is something that they need to continue to invest in and get more kids interested in it in the United States.
Matt has died.
Yeah, so in the United States. But I do think that there are going to they do need to make changes to help speed the game up. I'm not suggesting it has to be a two-hour game. I was saying to George earlier in the show, I went to a two-hour game a couple of years ago. Yeah, let's just keep it under 3 hours and not have, you know, something I heard at, a friend of mine who wants me to talk about it on air, and I will at this moment. He calls it the Lynch rule. My friend's last name is Lynch. His suggestion, and I'm bringing it up because I heard somebody else say it on the way in. I was listening to a different station, Richard Neer, who's a local broadcaster here in New York. He had the exact same idea, and is that you limit pitching changes per inning to two. So lefty-lefty matchup, righty-righty matchup, you're bringing in a third guy in the inning. He wants the pitching changes limited to two per inning, which isn't that crazy, but your thoughts about something like that?
That I don't like. I'm not for the specialization. I think we've gotten so crazy with it. I like watching starting pitchers go deep into games. I mean, I understand now everybody's throwing 95 and
that
all this.
Ship has sailed, though, right? We're not going to see
but
Tom
what about Seaver. What about something like they do in like soccer at some point? You want to speed up the game? Get rid of so many commercial breaks.
That's not going to happen.
No, but I'm saying have put something on the jersey like they do. I mean, We can do something, or this game is sponsored by so-and-so. And I mean, I don't know, but I don't think you can really just destroy the game. I mean, I don't want to see it get deformed in any kind of way.
Pitching change rule?
Pitching change? No, I agree with Matt. I don't want to change the game. All right, they want to change pitchers. It's where we are in the sport right now. They change pitchers. You want to stop all the visits to the mound? I'm okay with that. Why is a shortstop, second baseman, third baseman, left fielder, some guy in the concession guys to go out to the mound and talk to the pitcher every time? All right, that gets a little ridiculous after a while. So, no, I'm not for that. If commercials, listen, yes, it would solve the problem. It's not going to happen. All right? They'll lose money. Everybody will lose money. It's not going to happen. If anything, they're going to add what Matt said and the commercials. You're going to have both. You're not going to have less. So that's never going to happen. Saying football, hockey, baseball, forget about it. Basketball, they're never going to get rid of their ads. They got to make their money for all the money everybody's making. I am fine with that. Listen, keep the batters in the box. Pitchers throw the ball. Get rid of the home plate umpire. That'll speed the game up too. You know, because the home plate umpire doesn't like to call people out on strikes or strike zones even or small as a cereal box. Go to Quest Deck, strike balls, you'll solve arguments. That'll solve.
Did you see the Eric Burns piece on HBO, the Real Sports? Eric Burns did that because he's been very outspoken about just using Quest Deck to call balls and strikes. He did. It was a minor league game. Or maybe it was like an independent league game. He sat behind a home plate. He had an earpiece in. The guy monitoring the Questech machine so he's there. He's geared up, but he's being fed instantaneously whether it's ball strike, and he's calling it. And the game moved.
There's no arguments.
Just as rapidly did not delay the game in any way.
And it's fair for everybody.
And guess
what?
By the way, every
it doesn't
call,
change the strike zone
every
from
call
batter
was
to batter.
Right.
Right. There's no argument. There's no, hey, oh, this guy's got a 20-inch strike zone. This guy's got a 14. This one's got a strike zone up to his ears. This one got down to his toes. It's the same strike zone for everybody. No more the veteran pitcher gets a bigger strike zone than the rookie, which is completely asinine. It drives me insane. I hate the home plate umpire. I hate it.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, I am a big baseball fan as part of the romanticism of the sport, but there's a lot of umpires that have chips on their shoulders about it, and they are as combative as the players are. And that's always bothered me. I've never thought it was their role to be that. I understand you have to manage the game in a certain way, but I've always found certain home plate umpires, certain umpires generally, to be combative with the players looking for an argument, for a fight.
There are definitely some umpires that are looking for a fight.
So,
listen, I ref hockey games. We all have bad nights. You're just angry. You know, and you look at anybody, looks at you, oh, you got a penalty. And listen, I'm sure the home plate umpires are the same way. There's guys they want to strike out. You know, give that, you know, strike three, you're out of here. And they want to, you know, they give the big thing, and they want to start World War III.
Yeah.
They're looking for it.
I believe that's known on Twitter as the ump show.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, the ump show is.
And we see that probably once a night. There's an umpire somewhere.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
So you know, there's an umpires want to be part of the game. They want to be part of the show, which is something you should never want to be as an umpire or ref. You want to be in the background. You don't want to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You're nothing. It's one thing to miss a call. There's another thing to be part of the game.
I agree with you. So, so a couple other rule changes really regarding replay. There'll be a 30-second limit for a manager to decide whether to change a play and invoke replay review.
And it's another thing I don't like.
What?
What's this going to lead? What was the idea of replay? Get the call right.
Yeah, now they're trying to speed up.
Which means you get a call's going to be missed.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough time to find out if it was right or wrong. Then the 2 minutes thing. Oh, you get a different camera angle, 2.5 minutes, but it's already over, but he was out.
So this is a delicate one for me because in some ways, will it compel teams to have their stuff together in order to get replays? Yes, but I don't think the teams from an organizational standpoint are trying to delay it. The managers, however, do go out and they do a dog and pony show. Let's talk with the pitcher. Let's warm somebody up. Maybe this guy's hurt. There's always gamesmanship for the manager to try to delay it to figure out whether or not they're going to review it, right? We've seen that plenty.
Well, my take is let's even take it out of the manager's hands. Let's have it in the central office. Let's have an umpire that has like an earpiece or something. We have so much technology today.
Won't that solve time too?
We don't need them to go walking behind the thing and somebody coming out with this. Let there be somebody saying, "Hey, that guy was safe at second." Take it out of the manager's hands. We don't need them walking around making up time. And the other thing, instead of trying to limit how many pitchers can pitch in an inning, limit maybe how many times you could go out to the mound or how many times the catcher could go out to the mound. Maybe something like that.
I absolutely would be okay with that.
Didn't Girardi bring up that maybe the pitcher could wear an earpiece? I think they're doing football with the helmet.
God, that seems like that would be totally uncomfortable.
Why?
I don't know. I find it different with the helmet.
You wear one of those little Secret Service things or whatever it is. Well, it wouldn't be on. I mean, that's not going to be on the hat.
No, I'm saying it would dangle
but
down.
I mean, the catcher
I would think it would fall off
one.
A lot.
No, I'm sure they can have technology where it wouldn't fall off. But Joe Girardi brought that up, which is not, I don't think it would never happen, mind you. But it's not the worst idea on the planet to solve that problem. No more managers coming out. No more catcher, the second baseman, the concession guy. Everyone needs to talk to the pitcher. And you have hours upon hours before a game to talk about every scenario. Why does it need to be talked about again?
Wasn't it Wilson Contreras that was like going out to the mound?
Oh, my God.
He's going out to the mound at every pitch in the World Series.
You're a Yankee fan. And Posada used to do that all the time. It used to drive me insane.
Yeah.
I mean,
at the end of games, you got to talk through every pitch.
Every pitch.
Like, there are times, though. Are times when, like, say, like a young kid's losing his, you know. I mean, Steven Strasburg is, like, famous for that. He starts melting down at times. And, you know, if the catcher could go out, calm him, he can get his composure back. But it does get a little too carried away. They want to let the guy warm up a little more. So there are aspects that way. But.
So the 30-second limit, I think Matt brings up a good point about centralized review and not being manager challenges.
But we've all known that.
Yeah.
I don't know why
the funny thing is,
that.
Too, as much as I like college football reviews everything. And those games are long. You get four-hour college football
and
games.
And nobody
now.
Really complains about it, though.
Not at the same level. I agree. But some of those college football games are interminably long.
Some? How about all?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, they're longer
than
NFL
games. Notre Dame, Texas last year, the opening game was like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was a great game. But yeah. It was like 4 hours long.
Yeah. So 30-second replay limit. Not really a fan, but we'll see how it works out. Just because I think calls are going to get missed that way, and that's not the point
of
instituting replay.
Right.
So
it doesn't make sense.
When a manager has exhausted his challenges for the game, crew chiefs may now invoke replay review for non-home run calls beginning in the eighth inning instead of the seventh inning. Thoughts, George?
Listen, I'm a get the call right guy. You know, I hate when games are decided by a wrong call. Especially when it's obviously that can be overturned easy. You know, I believe what Matt said. Central office, let them, hey, buzz down. You blew it. You missed a call. Put the runner on first base. He's out. He's safe. Whatever it is. Get the call right. Obviously, if I'm a Quest Tech guy, I want those calls right, too.
Yeah.
I want to take the human element out of it. We have all the technology. Let's use it. You know, I think it's kind of silly that we have games that decide people's jobs. People get fired because they lost this game, or they lose their job because you lost this game when they shouldn't have lost the game. We could see it clearly. When everybody at home can see it, that this guy was out, this guy was safe, or this umpire is an 88-foot strike zone, he was seeing all these calls. You know, and I don't understand why we don't correct this.
I thought a terrible moment for me as a sports fan is when the NFL had instant replay and got rid of it. I thought it was a huge mistake, but obviously the system that they had in place was flawed. That's why they got rid of it for a period of time. Anyway, your thoughts on that, frankly, arbitrary move from the seventh inning to the eighth inning?
Well, see, that's the problem. So what happens if in the seventh inning the manager doesn't have any challenges? So now a play that was obviously maybe he was out or safe, either
tough
way.
Buggies.
That makes no sense to me.
I agree.
You can't be half pregnant. Either just have somebody do it correctly, and that's the way to go. Take it out of the manager's hands. Have the umpire watching the game saying, you know what? You guys missed that one. He was safe. It was a home run. Yada, yada. But
just have it be an umpire's way. The umpires can't complain. Have an umpire in New York with the central. You know, have a fifth umpire in the crowd. Have a fifth umpire in the booth. You know, and just watch. I mean, it's not that difficult. It's not that hard to understand here. They make everybody happy.
Liz Rocher from Yahoo did a really good job of breaking down these rules, and her point was exactly what you just said. A manager now has to think about another whole inning when deciding whether or not to challenge. If he challenges a play in the fifth and the call isn't overturned, he's out of luck if there's a questionable tag in the seventh inning. So the umpires don't have to take a look at that because it's not.
Well, maybe you should be sure.
Because it's not.
I don't want to see
call.
Every call challenged because you think he might have missed. You should be able to see it. If you can't see it right away, then it probably shouldn't be overturned.
Yeah.
I mean, I do want it to be more of the obvious stuff. I don't want to use managers to be doing as well. There's a chance. I got nothing to lose here. Let's challenge it. I don't want to see that kind of garbage.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about this and talking a little bit about the draft that Matt was in last week. Mike, Matt, and George back after this. Welcome back. Talking a little bit about those MLB rule changes. We'll continue to talk NFL. George and Matt talking hockey during the break. Might get a chance there at the top of the next hour. Talk a little bit
Corey
more about
Corey gave
that.
Me my own segment to talk hockey the other day. Love you, Corey.
A conditional two-minute guideline for replay officials to render a decision on a replay review, allowing various exceptions. And this is the most pointless of the rule changes because, as Liz Rocher put it, and I totally agree, this essentially reads, you have a two-minute time limit unless it takes longer, which is totally fine, which is exactly what that rule means.
That's what it should mean, by the way.
Let's try and speed it up, but honestly, if you need a little bit longer, that's okay.
I believe most of the replay timelines were under two anyway. Most
yeah,
are
they did
a
much better job than the NFL did when they first when they've been tweaking it over the
well,
years.
Well, it's just in the, and the ref takes like eight years to walk to that little booth with, you know, a little porno thing going there. I mean,
little
the peep
show.
Yeah, why not just stay out in the middle of the field? We'll take care of it up here.
Same thing with baseball. Why do they help if I need to go anywhere? Why does the ref need to go anywhere? Like I said, we have a technology. Beep. Nope. Call's wrong. Put the ball at the 40, a minute and a half left in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, what's hard here?
Listen, people are always going to pick apart rule changes. I was reading something the other day. I think it might have been Peter King. I don't want to blame him. But I was so irritated because I've been saying for years, we have so much technology. You can absolutely put a chip in the ball so that we can determine exactly where the ball should go.
That's the biggest joke.
And then...
That's all guesswork.
So
sure, here.
Yeah, it's about here. Okay, you just decided the championship because you spotted it in the wrong spot. Let's put a chip in the ball so we at least have it within a football's length of where it's going to be.
Right.
And then I'm reading something the other day, and the guy, whoever it was, it could have been Peter King, is picking apart, well, where do you put the chip in the ball? Do you put it on the front, this side of the ball, or do you put it on the other side of the ball? Does it need to be all over the ball? And I'm like, stop saying no to the rule change because it isn't perfect. We're trying to improve this situation.
He's actually got a point, by
the
way.
He does have a point. So put one chip on either side of the ball. We'll be really close.
Yeah.
Much closer than we are now. The Ohio State-Michigan game this year was a disaster with trying to figure that out at the end of the game. And I watched it 50 times, and I still don't know if they got it right.
I just love when a runner runs to the outside, gets tackled right by the out of bounds. You know, he marks it there, and then they throw the football to the guy in the middle. He's like, about here.
Yeah, we're perfectly lined up. We're perfectly lined up 27 and a half yards from one another. Yeah, that's it.
Perfect. They're old men, too. Yeah, they'll get it right.
90, yeah, right. They're all over 50. Listen, I'm 44. I'm not making fun of 50-year-olds. I'm just saying. I turn 44 tomorrow, actually. Yeah. So
happy birthday.
Thanks, buddy. So
sucker.
I got 2 months left.
So in any event, so what's always funny about this in the NFL is – you see the two linesmen run towards the middle of the field, they're never lined up.
No, one guy's like,
yeah, it's like, oh, you got it? All right, I'll just.
And if you're
throw
a fan of the team, you're like, oh,
a yard and a half.
Please, I need you're the like, guy. I need you to get the ball first. Run faster. Right. Run faster.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, the other fantasy, guy got it. It's not a first.
I'm in a fantasy championship here. I need the yard and a half. In any event,
I think it's funny how the NHL has kind of been the best at replay. You know, the sport that always gets like knocked to the sides. They've been the best at it. If you watch an NFL game, Fox or CBS, whoever, they have these high-paid ex-officials talking about, well, it's not, it's a pass interference, it's not a catch. That guy should be in the booth looking it over for the NFL and just getting it done right away. Like that stupid thing with the guy walking over doing the peep show kind of thing.
that always really amused me. Why did? Cause it's going to take him. I mean, sometimes it's legitimately far. It's at one end of the field, he's at the other. It's going to take a little bit.
Who was the former official that was on? Mike Carey. He was on. Not it was. It wasn't 2016 season. He worked for one of the networks in the 2015 season, and he was getting excoriated on Twitter.
Oh yeah,
because he kept getting
he was
them
wrong
all.
Every time.
And they were all really all tight judgment calls, but he was wrong like five times in a row.
You wouldn't want him doing a coin flip for you.
And you're like, oh my God. Like he's in the league for 25 years and he's getting them wrong here. And I'm not saying that any of us would have gotten any of them right, but the reality was he no longer works for one of the networks. I think they just found that he either wasn't
good.
Oh,
he got killed,
at,
he was wrong.
Yeah.
Was he the ref that was I think he was there also we have holding offense. You had to like guess for a little bit. Yeah. Which way is he going to go?
Yeah.
Well, I still don't know what a catch is in the NFL.
That's true.
It's been so convoluted.
No clue.
Yeah, they made rules changes to try to clarify it for 2016, and it didn't clarify it at all. So
I never understood why they still make it. Hey, catch ball, 2 feet on ground, that's a catch. And the answer to that is a fumble. Why? And why in the end zone he's got to complete the catch, but a running back doesn't. Running back just you KO, you cross them, you touch the plane with the ball, touchdown. But the wide receiver has to catch the ball 2 feet on the ground, run around a little bit, order a pizza, drink a coffee, get it a touchdown.
So a couple years ago, Dez Bryant in Green Bay.
Oh, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
I'm just saying.
Three steps after it. What does he got to do? Seriously, what does he have to do? Caught the ball, maybe it was 2.5. You know, and a football move, because he was lying. It was a football. I mean, I've given up.
Yeah.
Now, so, granted, I'll say again. I think Dallas loses that game anyway. It was a minute left. Green. I think Rodgers comes down and does what he has to do. I think he'll need a field goal.
Based on what we just saw last month.
Right. There's same thing with the Romo when he fumbled Romo fumbled that snap in Seattle. It was a minute and a half. So Hasselbeck would have come down and won the game. So I'm not worried about that. But do I think it was a catch? Yes. And this is not being accounted for anybody. I think all these catches are generally are catches. It's a joke. Catch the ball 2 feet on the ground. That's a catch. Then the play begins again. He fumbles. The best rule change, by the way, I do like the no more, the defender hits you out of bounds, and we think you might have got 2 feet in, it's a catch. No, you don't gonna be so close to the boundary then. I love the idea of the defender pushing you out, if you don't have 2 feet down, it's not a catch. I think that was a good rule change a couple of years ago.
I'm with you. I agree with that. The last one on MLB, a prohibition on the use of any markers on the field that could create a tangible reference system for
fielders.
That's
the Dodgers rule.
Yeah. Dodgers were caught doing it in 2016. When they played the Mets at Citi Field in May, Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports reported that the Dodgers used an electronic laser rangefinder to mark defensive positions in the outfield. It was done before the games, and the Dodgers asked the Mets ground crew if they could leave the markers. While the grounds crew eventually said no, that had to be awkward for them, the Dodgers said that their outfielders would clean up the grass in that area if the markers were removed to indicate their positions, and that's exactly what this new rule is prohibiting. Teams can still use electronics to help with positioning before the game, but they are no longer allowed to leave marks of any kind on the field to help players stand where they're supposed to. So, obviously, this is very much the technology age, and this is a rule prohibiting teams from doing that in any as... this phrase is any tangible way. Your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, I don't see why they have to have markers. There's no need. These are MLB players. If you're playing center field every day, you're playing. I know they're different stadiums. You're on the road, but I think they have such advanced scouting now with every player. I don't think this is necessary. And
how about? And I'll flip over to the last one. We're going to talk about George, the Carter Capps rule about. An addition to Rule 5.07 formalizes an umpire interpretation by stipulating that a pitcher may not take a second step toward home plate with either foot or otherwise reset his pivot foot in his delivery of the pitch. So basically, they'll call a balk. It's really Carter Capps and Jordan Walden is the other pitcher impacted by it.
Jordan, it was three pitches. I think Walden was one, was Caps, and another guy who was...
I got to be honest. It really does look like a balk.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump.
Caps is basically releasing the ball, and he's not as tall as somebody like Randy Johnson. He's basically releasing the ball at the front of the pitching circle.
I personally don't think it should be allowed.
I agree.
It's unfortunate for him. He's going to have to figure it out pretty quick.
I think right now they said he's legal the way he does it. It's sort of a borderline thing here.
That looks illegal to me.
I agree. Listen, to me it looks wrong. But so, I think of what the umpire said right now, he's always sort of okay.
Listen, this is very difficult to explain on the radio. You're just going to have to go Google Carter Capps delivery.
Oh, you'll see it right away.
Effectively pushes off.
Taking a hop, skip, and a jump.
Pushes off his foot, slides his back foot down the mound, which sort of fakes contact with the mound.
It's kind of impressive to watch him do it. I mean, I don't even know how you even like.
Well, that's why maybe you're on problem.
Yeah,
how did you learn how to do that?
That
yeah, how would you learn how to
delivery.
Do that?
It's so wicked and wild.
Yeah. So anyway, that's it on the rules. We'll talk. Matt was in an auction draft last week. There's 23 picks, and you are continuing with the 27 rounds of the slow draft. So it's 50 roster team. Are you making roster moves throughout the year? Is this a best ball scenario?
No, this is you have to set lineups, but this is 50 players, no in-season pickups.
Got it. Okay. So I want to talk about one of the teams in that draft. We talked a little bit about your team last year. We can review that some, but I really want to talk about a team whose strategy was punting power. So we'll talk about that after the break. Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Matt Modica and George talking a little bit about Matt's recent auction draft, which occurred, I believe, last Friday night. So we talked about it some last Saturday. We broke down Matt's team. It was an auction draft. How many teams? 15?
15 teams, correct.
15 teams, 23-round auction draft. That team will be supplemented by 27 more players in a slow draft that they're currently doing. So the teams will have 50 players. Obviously, 15 teams, 50 players, extremely deep. No in-season pickups, though. You have to make lineup changes, but that's all you have access to throughout the year. So transactions will be over when the slow draft ends. So, Matt, just to review your team, you a catcher, Yasmani Grandal, CJ Cron was your first baseman. Questionable. But we talked about that a little bit last week. Yeah, Kipnis, Segura, Mancada, Raul Mondesi, Jed Jerko, Kevin Kiermaier. Outfield is loaded, though. Starling Marte, Giancarlo Stanton, Nelson Cruz, Gregory Polanco, and Keon Broxton gets you some steals. Your staff is Johnny Cueto, Yu Darvish, Andrew Miller, Cam Bedrosian, your favorite. Adam Ottavino, Zach Davies, Daniel Norris, Irvin Santana, Robert Gesellman, who you got for a buck. So we kind of like that team overall. Right, George? Love the outfield. Pretty good pitching depth, yes?
Oh, I was supposed to be paying attention to this?
No, a little bit.
I'll say again, no one cares about anybody else's draft.
Yeah.
No one cares about my draft. It's just I get it. I was paying attention. I was just kidding. Sure. I mean, listen. When it comes to a draft or a grind, I know all week long, Corey wanted me to grade Scott's draft, Corey was going to grade me, and Scott was going to grade Corey in the mock draft. Really, unless you're an idiot, a draft is a draft. It's a head start. It's not going to determine if you win a league or lose a league. What determines whether you win or lose, generally, the moves you make during the season, and staying healthy. It's that simple.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
As you were saying, I'll make a couple of for instances here. Being that I loaded up on outfield, I got Segura and Kipnis, which I felt very comfortable there. So
I feel like I talk more about John Segura on this show.
Oh, by the way, I made that trade.
You did?
I did, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I don't think Matt knows what we're talking about. But,
so what? Basically, George and Mike Cardano got into an argument about Segura on air a month ago. It was... George is just saying you paid too much for him.
That's not what I said. Not what I said.
Is this from the draft, the FST?
Yes. No, my problem was Mike said
he drafted a shortstop because they were running out of shortstop.
Right, in the fourth round, I thought it was psychotic. Yeah. Still think it's psychotic.
But one thing about Gene Segura, I brought this point up before.
We're talking about Segura again. It's unbelievable. Four
players can't escape this guy.
The four players that hit 300, 20 homers, 20 stolen bases, three of them are all going in the first round. Segura is the only one who's probably got like a fourth round.
What were the stats?
Batted 300, hit at least 20 homers, and stole at least 20 bases. The other guys are Mike Trout, what's his name, Jose Altuve.
Overrated.
And I guess Mookie Betts would
overrated.
Be overrated.
Wow. Kidding. But Segura won't hit 20.
Pick the three best players in fantasy baseball.
This is the first Segura year I do have him, Gene Segura. He hasn't been a guy that I have taken. But getting back to the point about like CJ Cron, in the draft portion of it, my first pick was Eduardo Rodriguez. I got my pitcher. But being that I was weak on the corners, and I have guys like Moncada, who I think is going to be up, but maybe the first month, just to say, you know, maybe the first month he's down. But Brett Lowry just got cut. And the guys I went with my first four picks were Eduardo Rodriguez, Steve Pierce of Toronto, who I really like, and I think is going to get a lot of playing time at first base and in the outfield for the Blue Jays. And a guy on the corner who nobody is even thinking about, but I think he could be a 270, 275 hitter with 15 home runs, is Adonis Garcia. So I got him. He's a guy that I think is by no means a superstar or anything, but in a 15-team league, I think he has some value. And for the short term, I even picked up a guy like Danny Espinosa if I need to just fill him in before Raul Mondesi is a full member of the Kansas City Royals.
Got it. Okay. So you've addressed some of the things where you feel like you have holes. You've addressed some things. Adonis Garcia last year, 563 plate appearances, hit 273, 14 homers. Not bad. But, you know, 32 years old. He's not a spring chicken. So on a Braves team where...
I think that's a Braves team that's on the way up. And I love the acquisition of Brandon Phillips. I think they're a deeper lineup. So, I mean, I think the Braves are really going to be one of those teams that make a nice jump this year.
You think the same thing, George?
Yes, I do think the Braves are a team. I don't know if I'm going to put them in wild card contention, but I don't think they're going to be a... you know, a team you step on. I think they're on the way up. I like their pitching staff. They have a lot of good young pitchers coming up. They're going to be a team to be reckoned with in the very near future.
To your point, George, an article came out this week, MLB.com, ranking top farm systems. The Yankees are second, but the Braves are first. They have seven players in the top 100, according to MLB.com's top 100 prospect, Dansby Swanson, Ozzie Albies. Pitchers, though, to your point, Colby Allard, Mike Soroka, and Sean Newcomb, and Ian Anderson. So they have four pitching talents.
I like Fulte. I know it's now.
Yeah, I like Fulte as well. I have him as my deep NL sleeper. Sean Newcomb was my 49th round pick. He's got a big, big arm. He just needs to find the plate. He could be somebody that if they need that punch in the middle of the season, if he's
49th
finally
round, harnessing, a 15-team league?
49th round.
People sleeping in your league?
No, nah, this is some veteran guys, yeah. But I guess people don't think he's coming up. He does have that.
Oh, wait. This is a not a keeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. One, no, yeah. That's fine. I get it.
No, he's just taking a shot. All right. And he comes up.
See, what these guys play in a role.
Yeah, I'm betting
keeper.
On a big arm.
Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to talk about one team in particular. And again, you're right, George. Nobody cares about a particular draft. But I wanted to talk about this strategy. A player named KJ Duke. Again, it's an auction draft. He's the only guy that actually left money on the table, too, which is funny. But
that always annoys me when I leave money on an auction.
Yeah. I mean, literally 14 guys spent all every last dime, and he's just sitting there with 12 bucks. But
12?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a killer.
Yeah.
He made some mistakes.
But his strategy, and you've told us, Matt, that the guy wins. Like he's a big time player.
He's been around since I think the start of the NFBC. He's like one of the charter members. Very good player. He actually comes up with some great concepts for leagues. Like we have a MLB contract league where you're actually paying for the player's salary. So like if you wanted Clayton Kershaw, he's $365 this year because he's making $35 million. Mm-hmm. So if you want Kershaw and it's your turn to draft, towards your entry fee is the first 30 rounds. So you got to pay $350 for Clayton Kershaw.
Is there a cap?
There is no cap.
Interesting. that's interesting.
But as you were saying with KJ, this is a very interesting dynamic. He did it this time. There's other veteran players that I've seen do it in very high stakes entry leagues. And what he did was he really forced up pitching. He really skewed everything up with the starting pitching.
But a byproduct of that was that he effectively punted on power. He does not have a lot of homers that will be coming into this lineup. And, George, just thoughts. I mean, obviously there's a lot of different strategies that could conceivably work, but you typically don't hear of this being one that somebody would recommend. It's not for your amateur player to try.
I'm not generally a fan of punting any category. The two I would come really closest to are the two that a lot of people do is saves every now and then and stolen base. Although generally I don't punt them specifically, not going into a draft. Just maybe it worked out that way. I didn't get any speed. I didn't draft any closers. Well, but like I said, it's rare. You punt power. This is it's a 5x5 straight up. Mm-hmm. Well, that means you're also probably punting RBIs.
That's correct.
There's your problem.
Right.
So, but he's going runs. Stolen bases, average.
And here's his pitching staff. So his starting pitchers, and keep in mind, this is a 15-team league. He's got Chris Sale, Madison Bumgarner, Chris Archer, Justin Verlander, Kyle Hendricks, closer Cody Allen, and then he bolstered his staff with Rick Porcello, and then he's got Sam Dyson and Jim Johnson on the staff as well. So a ton of starting pitching and bankable starting pitching, as bankable as can be. On the flip side, you're talking about he went with stolen bases. He does have Jared Dyson. He's got Jose Peraza, Martin Prado, Josh Harrison, Josh Bell, Cesar Hernandez, Manuel Margot, David Peralta, Howie Kendrick. Man, there's no power in this team at all. It's really, like, you were not kidding that he punted power.
Yeah, well, that's the objective. Once you go this route, you don't want any power. There's no reason to have somebody in your lineup that's not going to at least steal, get a bunch of runs.
Yeah.
So it's a byproduct of that, but
Ender Inciarte on this team as well, George. So you can see there's no power, but there's a lot of stolen bases to go around.
Yay! I don't like punting a category, but if you punt one, I can see where you could survive. Your problem is you're punting two. That's going to be a bit difficult to do. Now, from hearing what you said about the team, doesn't have a whole bunch of saves either.
No.
I mean, Allen, okay.
Well, he does have three closes.
That's great. Dyson is on.
I'm not a Dyson guy.
Jim Johnson will be traded by, he doesn't have a lot of saves. Even Allen, questionable if Miller gets things there. So he's not going to automatically get 15 points in that category either. He's probably looking at the more than 10 range. He's a lot of points he's giving up here. He's giving up anywhere from, 28 to 33 points already gone.
That's,
well, one that, thing
I'm
he
with
did
George,
do
too.
In
I don't agree portion. That he has got a lot of saves coming in. In fact, you're going to be trying to steal his Cody Allen saves, too, because you have Miller.
Yes, actually, after the night we did the auction, Terry Francona came out the next day and said that Cody Allen was going to get the saves and all that. But I think Cody Allen is a very good closer, but I still think Andrew Miller is going to get saves. Andrew Miller's struck out over 100 batters the last three seasons, had a 2 ERA or less in every season. I think somebody tweeted out the other day that Andrew Miller had one more strikeout than Felix Hernandez in like half the innings.
So, really?
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
I don't know if that's more impressive or more.
Well, I mean, the problem with Felix is the fastball and the changeup are the same speed now. So,
well, Felix has thrown too many innings. He's just, it's caught up with him.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but it has.
I think I ranked him at like 47th or 48th, and I still didn't feel comfortable, but at some point I had to put him somewhere.
They were somebody, one of the top people in our business, I'm not going to name names, didn't have in his top 200.
Wow.
And I don't blame him.
The only reason you have to put him somewhere is he is such a good pitcher that he, maybe in the offseason, he's so good at his craft that maybe he changes. He makes some adjustments.
Himself.
You know, he could become more of a junk ball pitcher now. You know, instead of like his previous act.
153 innings last year, he threw 122 strikeouts.
Yeah, Andrew Miller had 123.
So there you go.
That's, I can tell you off the top of my head.
Yeah. So, but obviously, KJ Duke, he's going to dominate in strikeouts.
He's going to dominate in wins, ERA, WHIP. I mean, I'm jealous because I'm usually the guy that spends $110 to $115 on pitching. I always love having a solid staff, but this was my first auction. I wanted to try something different. I had that outfield thing in my mind. And honestly, I kind of really like my pitching the way it all transpired. I got Eduardo Rodriguez and Steven Wright. So I got two Boston guys that if David Wright is done, that's a big plus for me. I also got a guy like Drew Hutchinson, who I think is going to have the shot in Pittsburgh. I'm probably dying in hell waiting for this guy. But even a guy like Drew Storen, I got in the 28th.
What was the number that you said that you tried to spend?
I usually try to spend like 110.
He spent 185.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, Chris Sale went for 37. Syndergaard went for 38 in this league. I think I bid $19 for Kyle Hendricks because I wanted that third guy.
You got him for
and
20.
He went 20, and I was just like, okay, that's it. Yeah. You know, yeah. Like George says, it's an auction, and especially when somebody does something as unique as this, things are going to get skewed. And
so you don't mind a different. I think you're ultimately, George, you're saying you don't mind a different kind of strategy, but. He didn't just punt one category. He looks like he's punted two. Maybe
that's my three. That's my only issue here. Listen, it's a 15-team league. You're going to need to think out of the box a little bit to win these kinds of leagues, especially in a league that knows what they're doing. So I don't mind that. But like I said, punting two categories, it's tough. Especially, like I said, I can point out saves going to be an issue as well. He didn't punt that category, not at all. But he's probably looking at the middle of the pack finish there. It's a lot of points you're giving up. It almost means you have to win the other seven categories.
No, true. No, you do. I mean, I've sat and watched. I haven't participated in, but I've seen, I believe it's Jim Ferrari, maybe he's the guy, in very high stakes leagues. He plays, he's one of the money leader guys up on the board in the NFBC. He's been doing it for years, and this is one of his strategies. I've seen other people do it too, and it obviously has to work. I mean, I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it, but you have to be very disciplined. And you just got to pound. If you're in a draft, all you're doing, I've seen, you're just pounding, pitching. And then it's like speed guys.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. So, no, I thought that was interesting. It's always good to kind of flesh that kind of stuff out. It's a unique take on what you can do. I don't think it's for the amateur player. I think it's something that you have to be really dedicated to your point. I think you just have to go in there with that strategy, not waver from it even a little bit, because that could throw everything else off balance. So we'll talk a little bit more about that draft and baseball drafts in general. So Mike, Matt, and George back after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Just saw the weirdest story on MLB.com. I had no idea. Maybe you guys are already familiar with it. Do either of you watch Game of Thrones?
I've read every book, and I am a diehard.
You are. George?
Sure, I watch.
So Noah Syndergaard is actually going to be an extra in the upcoming season of his favorite show, which is Game of Thrones.
King of the North.
So that's actually kind of cool. If it's your favorite show, you get a chance to be on there. The guy looks like a freaking Viking. They call him Thor. Why not do it? That's kind of a cool story. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, he is the perfect. That was like the perfect guy to be like an extra and stuff. He fits right in.
Yeah. So there you go. It has absolutely nothing to do with fantasy sports. I just thought it was a cool story. Just kicking around that draft a little bit more. I'm just gonna pick apart a couple of players that we've had some questions about. A couple of guys we've talked about before. You know, Didi Gregorius goes for $2 in this draft. Obviously, auctions, listen, it can fluctuate based on the depth and the amount of players and when they're thrown out. But your thoughts on Didi Gregorius this season, Matt?
I like Didi. I think he's a good player, solid player. Torres is still young. He should get the full season. Maybe he's going to start in Double A. I would assume that they're not going to rush him. The Yankees are in no need for that. I think it's wise to give him some time in Triple A. And I think D-Day's a solid player. It turned out to be a very nice trade for the Yankees getting him.
Yeah, so George, he turns 27 this season. Last year in 150, nearly 600 plate appearances. 20 homers, 70 ribbies, .276. The on-base percentage, not what you're looking at, .304. But your thoughts on Didi this season? Can he improve upon last year?
I don't know about improve. I mean, 20 home runs, you'll take that out of a Didi. Hit a home run his first spring training at bat, a good sign. Short porch, Yankee Stadium. I don't see why the home runs won't be there again. I think he's once again tailoring his swing for that porch to drive the ball to right and right center. So I think what you get is what you get with him. I'm not worried about him this year. You know, if you think about it long term, I might be a little worried there. The Yankees are loaded with shortstops from Torres, Mateo, somebody else whose name I can't remember right now. So that would be the bigger issue there, is that where will he end up? I don't think he'll be with New York.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about the Yankees. We talked about the Braves briefly, and the Yankees ranked number two, according to MLB.com, with the best farm system. and it starts in top 100 players. They also have seven. So Gleyber Torres is number three overall, shortstop. Outfielder Clint Frazier at number 24. Outfielder Blake Rutherford at number 37. Outfielder Aaron Judge at number 45. But obviously, we expect him to see a lot of at bats this year. Jorge Mateo, as you said, second base shortstop, number 47. James Kaprielian. Number 58, and Justice Sheffield at number 79. So a couple of shortstops just there as you're talking about.
Yanks are loaded.
Behind Didi. Mm-hmm. So in any event, Didi Gregorius currently, according to NFBC average draft positions, he ranks in, he's 17th in the Marcus Semien, Brandon Crawford, Orlando Arcia, Asdrubal Cabrera. Conversation. So you like him more or less than this? I heard people talking about Marcus Semien on this network the other day, and they were kind of bullish on him.
Well, I mean, he's going to get the at-bats. He hit, 27 home runs last year.
Yeah.
He's a good player going late. I mean, I think the shortstop, like a guy that I've been going after in, like, the 11th, 12th round is Tim Anderson. I like Tim Anderson. A little worried about his bat, but he should get every opportunity in Chicago. Fast player. I mean, the kid can run like the wind. I think he hit like 9-10 homers in his after his call-up last year. Not a power guy, but he's got a little pop. So I've been targeting a guy like Tim Anderson. So later on, a guy like Asdrubal Cabrera is somebody that I want on my team. Just in case he falters, I think Asdrubal, there's been a lot of talk about how he's manufactured his swing with Kevin Long, kind of similar to like Daniel Murphy did. And I like Didi. I mean, even like a Brandon Crawford, who's nothing spectacular, but he's going to play every day. He's got some pop. He's not really going to hurt you. So, I mean, these positions, the middle infield has gotten so deep. That's why when everybody talks about position scarcity, if I'm in a 15-team league, I do not have a problem going outfield heavy early. Because you got to fill, everybody's got to fill five outfielders.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about how deep third base is, but middle infield, George, it looks like we have some depth there as well at second base and shortstop.
Yeah, you do. What Matt just brought up was a very good point. I don't care about a 15-team league, a 12-team league, I'm drafting outfielders early. The point Matt was about to make is to do the simple math. 12 teams times fives, you're starting 60 outfielders, plus you're going to have some as reserve, some as your utility. 75 outfielders are going to go. You're in a 15-team league. They're all going. So you need outfielders. You need them early and often to fill those slots with full-timers.
Yeah, so, and I can see that strategy. You know, you're picking somebody like Tim Anderson where you feel like there might be a little bit of risk there, so you back him up with kind of veteran player who you know is going to get a lot of at-bats.
Well, I've been calling Tim Anderson the poor man's Trey Turner. I mean, everybody's got Trey Turner hitting 300 automatically this year. I think Trey Turner's going to be a very good player. I would like Trey Turner in the second round. If in the first round where he's going, there's other guys I'm taking. And maybe I'm wrong, but there's other guys I'm taking. And the other rhyme of reason of my thought is, if Trey Turner's going, say, 10th, and I take Bryce Harper instead at 10, and I'm in a 15-team league, or if I'm in a 12-team league, I should have a shot at either Sterling Marte or Jonathan Villar in early second round. Who I think of, pretty much everybody wants Trey Turner to be Sterling Marte, what he's done. I mean, Jonathan Villar, even with some regression added in, is still going to be a very good player, I think. I mean, so.
Thoughts on him, George? Matt seems to feel the same way as you do about Trey Turner in general.
Yeah, I think Matt and I are on the same wavelength there. For me, I'm just a conservative drafter. I have nothing against Trey Turner. I think he's going to be a great player. I'm not spending a first-round pick on him or a top second-round pick. I can't do it. I need to see another season of it before I do that. I like drafting players who have done it over and over again. I can look on the back of their baseball card online, see what they're going to do, and be able to cross off 25 home runs, 80 RBIs, whatever it is. That's just the way I'm drafting, but I have nothing against Turner. As far as Villar, I'm fine with him as well. I like the multi-position eligibility, the damage he can do there. Marte, I've always been a big fan of. I need to see more power out of him would be nice.
But I think that's possible.
I think it's possible as well. Surprisingly, he didn't have more last year, but everything else is very good. Going to be a center fielder there now. I don't really have a problem with any of these guys. My problem is I can't take Turner at 10, 11, 12 where he's going. I can't do it.
Do you think the move to center field Do you have any concerns about that physical toll? Guy moving to center field?
Sure, but I think he'll be fine. No, yes, he's going to have to cover more ground.
Talking about Marte, just to clarify my statement.
He should have been the center fielder like the last 2 years. But, I mean, Andrew McCutchen has been the face of the Pirates, so.
Yeah. That's it, folks. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. I think after the break, George and Matt are going to talk a little bit about hockey because the trade deadline happened.
Yeah, trade deadline sucked.
It was uninspiring, similar to the NBA trade deadline. Not a lot of big names got moved around, but might have an impact on fantasy hockey. Which George, you're still involved. You're still competitive in at least one of your leagues. Yes.
Yes, I'm still competitive in one. Not competitive in the other.
Okay. So Matt and George are going to talk hockey after the break. I'm going to sit back and listen, or maybe I'll get involved. And pronounce the name Shattenkirk without any issues whatsoever going out on the airwaves. So 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Hour number 3 on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network after this.